Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode 350. A couple things in the news. First and foremost, I wanted to tell you that if you go to Whence Came You right now, our website, wcypodcast.com, you're going to see a new link at the top. It says WCY Media LLC. What is that? Well, WCY Media LLC is the legal entity under which the WCY podcast rests. If you click on the link, it actually takes you to kind of a landing page. It's not real impressive. It's under construction. But essentially, it's just a place where you can go and you can see essentially what I've created, which is the parent to WCY podcast. The goal of WCY Media is to be able to assist Masonic, fraternal, or occult organizations or folks in production of their media. So if it's podcasts or website design, videos, or book publishing, you can hit me up and I'll help you out. And that's all run with just donations. So essentially, it's if we totally helped you out, consider making a donation. But we needed to put together some sort of LLC in order to keep Whence Came You and its intellectual property protected. In other news, I'm sure I've beaten it to death. We've been releasing videos every Thursday on our Facebook page for It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry. If you're on Facebook, please head on over there, search for it, give us a like, help us get a little bit of traffic. We put a lot of work into the book. It is available in both print and on Kindle. It is in iBooks, and it is coming to Audible. How soon? Pretty soon. We've actually got a great friend and brother working on putting that together for us. He's reading it. It's fantastic. You're going to love it. So that's the news there. It's going to be on Audible. I wanted to also address one of the recent things that happened. I published a piece on Midnight Freemasonry called Shadows Burned Onto the Walls, Addressing Freemasonry's Biggest Problem, and I really suspected that it was going to get quite the reaction in terms of maybe I was going to be stirring the pot. I didn't want to, but I wrote this piece from the heart, and I was really hoping that it would come across the right way, and it looks like it did. So just want to say thanks to everybody who sent me notes and messages telling me that it was right up your alley and that it spoke to you. So thanks again. I appreciate that. And it meant a whole lot even when Brother Greg Knott actually wrote a follow-up article called If Not Us, Then Who?, which is another fantastic piece. And I think maybe next week, if time permits, we could probably read the two of those pieces back-to-back and maybe start some dialogue. So today on the program, I actually have two pieces, and they are somewhat of a juxtapose because one is rather practical and the other is rather spiritual or holistic in nature. But I think you'll enjoy them both. The first one is called The 24-Inch Gauge, and it's by a guest contributor of the Midnight Freemasons, Michael Arce. We received quite a bit of great feedback on this article, and it got a ton of hits. So without further ado, The 24-Inch Gauge, How Can I Divide My Time to Meet My Obligation? By Midnight Freemason guest contributor Michael Arce. Within each degree, the instruction of the working tools is one of the most beautifully written parts of ritual. In the first degree, the use of the 24-inch gauge continues to fascinate me. Every time I hear the breakdown of the 24 inches into 24 hours, further divided into three equal parts of 8 hours, which are to be allocated for serving God, a worthy distressed brother, our work, and refreshment and sleep, I always think, how is that literally possible? At some point in the history of our craft, there must have been a time when men had time in their day to live like this, right? Those words were created back when we didn't sleep in 1 8-hour chunk, but in two shorter periods overnight. Dating back to medieval times, two-piece sleeping, as it was called, was standard practice. Chaucer tells of a character in the Canterbury Tales that goes to bed following her first sleep. And what did people do between their first and second sleep? Everything from reading a book, most likely their Bible, talk, or go for a walk in the countryside to visit with their neighbors. Keep in mind, this is back when time was still kept by burning a candle. Your day began literally at daybreak, and you were in bed by sundown. Dividing your time into three equal parts wasn't hard when your day was made up of eat, sleep, work, and repeat. Church wasn't just something you did on Sunday morning, it was your Sunday. Take away my Netflix binging on Sunday afternoon when I finally get to watch TV for a few uninterrupted hours, and instead give me a few hours every night between midnight and 2 a.m. for reading, and I would have that service to God box checked. Fast forward to 2018. If I was to compare dividing my time to the activity rings on my Apple Watch, the large ring would definitely be my work hours. The medium ring, my sleep, and the smaller ring, the time invested in the service to God or my brothers. I'm being very generous here with my math. I pulled up a random day on my calendar this month. Wednesday, April 11th. Work day for job number one started at 8 a.m., up for work by 6:45 a.m. Work schedule has a couple of conference calls, a meeting, lunch, and time at my desk to work on my daily task list. End of work day for job number one is 4:30 p.m. Job number two starts at 5 p.m. and goes until 11 p.m. Home by 11:30 p.m. and in bed, hopefully, before midnight. My work ring is dominating my life. And this isn't just happening on Wednesday of last week. This is pretty much every weekday. The more I investigate the breakdown of my time, the only time I really dedicate to Masonic service are my nights at lodge. That's like 4 hours a week. I'm being literal on purpose because it's impossible to literally divide your time into 8-hour parts every day. It is also important to remember that the working tools of an entered apprentice are the 24-inch gauge and the common gavel. One to divide your time, the other to clear your life of distractions. That's the important part of the working tools lesson. Do you examine how you spend your time? If your time is not prioritized, how can you fix the areas that are lacking? There is an advantage to living in 2018 versus 1518. Besides the warm shower to start my day or the fresh brewed cup of coffee that is set to go off at 7:15 a.m., I also have this little blue book that was given to me when I was raised as a Master Mason that contains all of the standard work and lectures from the degrees I took. I carry this little blue book to work to read during my lunch break or downtime. On my drive to and from work, I listen to my favorite Masonic podcast to get my weekly dose of Masonic education and discussion. I also have a cell phone in my pocket, and strapped to my wrist is a watch which allows me to text or call my brothers throughout the day. It might seem trivial, but when I ask them how their day is going or converse with them about their daily dilemma, isn't that service to a distressed worthy brother? When I re-evaluate my day through the lens of present day, yes, work still dominates my life, for now, but I can steal a few hours here and there to meet my Masonic obligations. Instead of literally dividing my time into three start-stop parts, I use a combined running clock. Really, what depresses me now is the fact that my sleep circle is pretty much non-existent. Until I start taking naps under my desk or retire, I don't see how I'm going to catch up in that area. Perhaps that's why we call them the working tools. Michael Arcee is Junior Warden of St. George No. 6, in Schenectady, and a member of Mount Zion No. 311, Troy, New York. When not in Lodge, Brother Arcee is a marketing manager for Capital Cardiology Associates in Albany, New York. He enjoys meeting new brothers and hearing how the craft has enriched their lives. He can be reached at michaelarcee@me.com. That's michaelarcee@me.com. Alright, I hope you enjoyed that piece. Before moving on, just want to mention how we support this program. So you can support this program by going to WCYpodcast.com, making a direct donation, or you can set up a monthly contribution, either $2, $5, or $10, respectively. That's a contributor, fellow, or producer. That's really how we support this show. That's how we pay the hosting costs and everything else. There are a few different ways you can support the show, however, not just straight donations. So aside from that, we also have our limited edition shop. Get this, I've got 4 lapel pins left. That's it. I don't think I'm going to run them again. I might in small batches for those new listeners who might want to grab one, but I don't think we're going to offer them in large quantity anymore. But have no fear, we are looking to do another cool product, and I'm working with somebody right now to design something very cool that we'll be offering soon. We do have a few money clips available. Those are still there, and we have our Mason's Lady car decal starting up in August. The Great Books program is coming back for another session that you'll be able to sign up for. Please head on over to WCYpodcast.com, hover over Support the Show, and click on the Great Books program to read all about that. It is a wonderful program. It's going to make you smarter. It's incredible. Our brother Scott Hambrick is a one-of-a-kind gent who set this all up. We interviewed him a few episodes back. You're going to want to check that out. The code to sign up for 25% off your first 3 months is WCY. Another great way to help out if you're looking to get a little something cool is Bankers Best. We've worked with Bankers Best. That's Levi over there, who is the owner and proprietor, who works his butt off to bring us really cool stuff. He's got great things in the works, but he already has a full line of products that are just amazing. He's got great reviews, but he also has a specific brand of product that he made just for us here. And it was initially offered just to our listeners, and he's since opened it up to anybody who would like it, but it is awesome. It's the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Oil and Balm. You can use the promo code BBWCY357 at the checkout, and you'll get a percentage off. Now, in addition to that, 50% of the proceeds from the King Solomon's Reserve come back to this program. And anything else, as long as you use that promo code, he'll send a little bit back to this show also. Lots of imitators out there. There's only one Bankers Best. So check them out. You can go direct to buybankersbest.com, or you can just find them on our website. Hover over Support the Show and click on Bankers Best. Of course, last but not least, we have our awesome sponsorship with Onnit Labs. So you can go to onnit.com, but preferably come to WCYpodcast.com, hover over Support the Show, click on Get Onnit. There you'll see any number of products that are really great. Main two products that I think are fantastic are, of course, Alpha Brain and Hemp Force Protein. If you use the promo code WCY, easy one to remember, you'll get 10% off, which covers the shipping. It's FedEx, so it's a nice little discount for you. And it's all the same price as it normally would be had you gone direct to them. So you help yourself out, you're helping the show out, it works. Before we move on to the next piece, we've got a great piece here from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
Over the years, I've seen my lodge and other Masonic bodies deal with members who don't pay their dues in a variety of ways. It seems there has been a progression of sorts, requiring less and less of a financial effort for a brother to return. Years ago, I recall the NPD brother had to pay dues for each year missed, plus the current year's dues, to become a member in good standing once again. Then, there was a period when the member in arrears had to pay just last year's and current year's dues. Now, for one of the bodies where I am a member, a brother can rejoin just by paying the current year's dues. If things keep going this way, I guess we'll have to pay them to come back. Of course, these men are our brothers, and we do in fact want them back. And there are good reasons why some don't pay, hardship and illness being at the top of the list. Every Masonic body I belong to always takes that into consideration, and I have seen many meetings where understanding members remit the dues of a brother who simply cannot pay. Still, I think we're pretty lenient with non-payment of dues. My personal opinion is we probably should be. I mean, how many times have we heard it? It's easier to keep the members you have than to go out and get new ones. With all that in mind, I ran across something that really made me do a double take. Make that a triple take. I was going through records kept by a 19th century Grand Secretary in Missouri when I came across a list of suspensions for Missouri Lodge No. 1. The first half dozen entries were for a group of brothers suspended July 2nd, 1868, for non-payment of dues. The first line made note that Brother William Stewart was suspended NPD for a period of 5 years. Wow, I thought. 5 years? That's pretty stiff. No, it turns out Brother Stewart got off easy. The next four entries were for members suspended for periods of 20 or 25 years. 25 years for non-payment of dues. Now, that sends a message. The sixth entry was for Brother Maximilian Eller, suspended for a period of 10 years. This line also contained a note that Brother Eller came back after the 10-year suspension ended and paid his dues. In those records, there were other brothers suspended for 25 years, which seemed to be more or less the standard. But beginning in 1872, with only two exceptions, NPD suspension penalties were, quote, until paid. So apparently, until paid became the new standard. One of those original six brothers, Charles Eager, may have heard about this. Originally suspended for 20 years, the records indicate he returned in 1876 and made restitution. It's not too much of a stretch to imagine he went back to Missouri No. 1 and said, "Hey, look, I got a pretty harsh suspension for NPD, but today you're letting guys off the hook if they just pay up. How about cutting me a little slack, too?" I doubt if he used that exact phraseology, but they did, in fact, let him back in. I have to conclude somewhere along the way, Missouri No. 1 decided its penalties for non-payment of dues were excessive and backed off. It's also possible the Grand Lodge somehow stepped in with different standards. Whatever the case, at that point, those standards became more closely aligned with those we have today. We may never know why they made that change, but it's possible they too discovered it's easier to keep the members you have than go out and get new ones. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
I know you all enjoyed that segment. Brother Harrison always brings the coolest segments for us. If you're interested in more of his work, I would urge you to check out the link for the WCY bookstore, which is just a bunch of hot links to books that are by authors who we've had on the show, and you'll find Brother Stephen Harrison's books there, and you can click on those, and it'll take you directly to Amazon.com where you can pick those up. Now, this piece is pretty fantastic. It was published a few years ago, and it was by Brother James E. Fry. Now, Brother James is somewhat of an interesting fellow, very adept. He was one of the first people that we started publishing on the Midnight Freemasons who touched on deeper aspects and some really interesting stuff. So the first piece we had was practical in nature. This one is not as practical, but perhaps a little bit more mystical. It's called The Magic of King Solomon. It actually had over 32,000 hits on MidnightFreemasons.com, so a fairly interesting and a very popular piece. The Magic of King Solomon. Quote, "I pray thee, O King, listen to what has befallen all that thy child hath. After we are all released from our work on the temple of God, after sunset, when I lie down to rest, one of the evil demons comes and takes away from me one half of my pay and half of my food. Then he also takes hold of my right hand and sucks my thumb. And lo, my soul is oppressed, and so my body waxes thinner every day." Testament of Solomon, verse 4. My brethren, one tenet of the Masonic system is the constant reflection of the self. We must reevaluate who we are morally as well as psychologically. It is this constant progression of self-understanding that makes us face our archetypal shadow and conquer the negative aspects of the self. This is best personified by the archetype of wisdom in the Masonic system, King Solomon. King Solomon is interesting because his archetypal characteristics are found throughout the Mediterranean cultures. According to the Old Testament, Solomon was charged to build the Temple of Solomon and was known as the wisest of all men. In the Islamic tradition, Solomon is regarded as a prophet and a representative of Allah. But there is a hidden side of King Solomon, a side that has been represented, that has been repressed from the Western mythos, just as we hide the darker aspects of ourselves. In the Christian tradition, there is a separate myth that recounts Solomon not only as a wise king, but a very powerful ceremonial magician. This tradition is recounted in the 15th century grimoire, The Greater and Lesser Keys of Solomon, and the Testament of Solomon, a Christian text dating to around the 1st and 5th centuries CE. Although the authors of these obscure texts is unknown, its legend holds that it was the secret first-hand account of Solomon himself. Solomon's Testament deals with a variety of astrological and magical themes that even deal with acting as a bridge between Greek mythology and Christian theology. The book deals with a vast legions of demons, summoning spirits and magic rings. The legend begins with a young man who is favored by King Solomon. One day, he is attacked by a demon by the name of Ornias, who used his demonic powers to suck the vitality and life from the youth's spirit. Upon hearing this news, Solomon summons the archangel Michael through the magical practice. According to the Lesser Keys of Solomon, this magical practice was known as the Almadel, which is how Solomon was said to have received wisdom from the angels. Michael arrives to the troubled king and entrusts him with a magic ring bearing the six-pointed star or seal of Solomon upon it. With this ring, Solomon gained the power to summon demons and spirits, using his will to control them and command them to complete tasks. Solomon then took control over Ornias, who then infiltrated the demonic prince Beelzebul, granting Solomon power over the legion of demons. According to the Lesser Key of Solomon, the Ars Goetia, there are 72 demons that paralleled to the fallen angels described in the Book of Enoch, who rebelled against God because they lusted after the daughters of man. It is important to note that these fallen angels also first brought sorcery and the magical arts to the material realm. Beelzebul reveals how he was once a high-ranking angel before the fall. It was the four archangels Michael, Raphael, Gabriel, and Uriel that descended down with their 72 angels of the Almadel and banished the rebellious demons unto the four watchtowers of the universe. With King Solomon in full command of the 72 demons, he commands them to aid in the construction of the Temple of Solomon. This is where the legend of the Goetia and the Masonic system begin to meet. The Goetia's connections can be found in various places throughout the Masonic system, but often hidden so that the true initiate sees not the adept's design. The angelic names bore on the cross of the older versions of the 29th degree, Knights of St. Andrew, are a prime example. There is nowhere else in Kabbalistic or magical lore where these angelic names are referred to, except the Greater Key of Solomon, as the last pentacle of the sun. But these angels are referred to in Phoenician legend, so it seems to understand the importance of the Testament of Solomon. We must look at it from the theological perspective of the time. This book acts as a way to reinterpret pagan gods of various cultures and rework them into the roles of demons. I believe King Solomon was chosen by Christians as the master magician because of his close association with the worship of pagan gods to please his many foreign wives. According to the Talmudic texts and the Book of Tobit, King Solomon soon was placed face to face with the king of demons, Asmodeus. Asmodeus is known for tricking King Solomon into gaining his ring of power that he then cast into the sea, where it was swallowed by a fish. This allowed the legions of demons under King Solomon's power to rise up against the king. Asmodeus then cast the king 400 miles outside Jerusalem. Solomon then lived as a beggar, wandering from city to city, working in kitchens and doing hard labor. Ancient rabbis claim this was divine punishment by God for Solomon worshiping foreign deities. Years later, he was walking in the market and bought a fish for his supper, the same fish that held the magic ring in his belly. King Solomon then returns to Jerusalem to expel Asmodeus and his demonic rule. Asmodeus is said to be thwarted by the archangel Raphael, who binds him. According to the tale, 1001 Arabian Nights, King Solomon is known as the Master of the Jinn and captures all the jinn, or demons, into a brass vessel and seals it with a magical symbol and casts the vessel out into the sea, trapping the jinn whom he first summoned to build the temple. This legend is the basis for the Greater and Lesser Keys of Solomon. The Lesser Keys of Solomon, the Goetia, is a medieval magical text that claims to give the techniques of materials needed to embark upon the mystical path of Solomon. It gives direction for casting magic circles and invoking demons and dark jinn into the consciousness of the magician. Here, like Solomon, the magician must unleash the demon from the brass vessel and symbolically slay the demon with a magical sword. Like the jinn trapped in the magical lamp, the demon may also grant the wishes and desires of the magician, but it is the test of fortitude for the magician to resist these temptations and expel the demon from his mind. Quote, "The spirits of the Goetia are portions of the human brain. Their seals therefore represent methods of stimulating or regulating those particular spots through the eye." Aleister Crowley, The Initiated Interpretation of Ceremonial Magic in the Goetia, end quote. If we as Masons want to look at this in a philosophical sense, we are all seeking to be the wise King Solomon. We must unlock the brass vessel of our own unconscious mind, releasing all the aspects of ourselves we care not to let out. Each demon can be seen as an aspect of our personality that we keep hidden from the world. It is the goal of the magician, with the aid of angels and magical weapons, to face the dark aspects of him and symbolically slay and expel those forces from our own spiritual nature, thus purifying him. The medieval system of what some would consider black magic is simply a way to reflect upon the aspects of our own psyche. If we as individuals wish to gain the wisdom of the archetypal king, we should face the shadow of ourselves and the demons that dwell in the void of our own nightmares. Before one sincerely attempts to evoke these demons, one should first spend some time invoking the 72 counterpart angels of the Almadel. The Almadel is a very enlightening experience and puts the magician in touch with the aspects of virtue within the psyche of the individual. This should be required for two reasons. One should be in touch with their inner strength before they face the demons, and two, the angels of the Almadel have direct control over the demons of the brass vessel. The Almadel is a system of scrying into a crystal ball over an altar made of wax upon which are engraved the holy names of God. Remember that invocation is to call down a power within your spirit and mind, so you invoke angels to bring them closer. The magician will evoke demons to bring from within oneself into manifestation. After one has made meaningful contact with his own inner angelic forces, he is now mentally and spiritually prepared to venture into the darkness of his own being. This system of high magic should only be attempted by those who have magical training or are learned practitioners of ceremonial magic. This system, to the unprepared, is very dangerous and can be disastrous for those who approach the subject matter with a light heart or contempt in the mind. A short excerpt from the Lesser Keys of Solomon will show the level of seriousness this system deserves. Quote, "Curse you and deprive you from all your offices and places of joy and place, and do bind them in the depths of the bottomless pit, there to remain until the day of the judgment. I say, into the lake of fire and brimstone, let all the company of heaven curse thee. Let the hosts of heaven curse thee. I curse thee into fire unquenchable and torments unspeakable, as thy name and seal is contained in this box, chained and bound up, and shall be choked in sulphurous and stinking substance, and burnt in the material fire, which is prepared for thee, damned and cursed spirits, and there to remain until the day of doom, and never more remembered of before the face of God, which shall come to judge the dead and the world by fire." End quote. Lesser Key of Solomon, Book 1, Ars Goetia. The goetic demons require quite an elaborate array of magical implements, such as the magic robe, a wand, sword, circle, ring, brass vessel containing the 72 sigils of demons, a black mirror within the magic triangle, and a very good memory. These evocations are quite lengthy, and the magical ritual can last quite a while, especially when in a hypnotic trance, which is required. For those of you who simply wish to greet your shadow self and do some soul searching, I recommend you find a mirror and paint it with up to 7 layers of black paint. Light some candles in a darkened room and gaze into the mirror without evoking the goetic demons. This is a form of meditation similar to the Trithaka yoga techniques and can be very beneficial for self-discovery or to just scare yourself the way kids have been doing while playing Bloody Mary for years. For those of you inspired to follow in the steps of the archetypal King Solomon to gain insight to the self or wisdom for above, with a sincere nature, this system can be very beneficial and enlightening, even life-changing. But for those of you who dabble or foolishly rush into such things and unleash the spirits of the brass vessel Solomon trapped so long ago, well, like the ancient jinn say, be careful what you wish for. James E. Fry, past Sovereign Prince, Valley of Danville, founder of the Rebus Research Society. Well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the program. If you like Masonic Podcast, please don't forget to check out the Masonic Roundtable, going live every Tuesday at 10, 9 central. If you like reading Masonic stuff, then check out the Midnight Freemasons, www.midnightfreemasons.org or .com, whichever you prefer. And that's it. So, until next week, stay on the level. From whence came you? I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.